Right, welcome to another episode of Quantum of Solace with David Robertson and Al Smith of the Solace Centre for Public Christianity. David, you've been very cruel to me this week. I have no idea about the topics that you want to talk about. 30 seconds ago, you've mentioned Yemen, Aleppo and Brangelina. Now, that sounds an intriguing trio there. Where do you want to begin?
You've got to begin with the most important news that's hit the world for decades, and that's Brangelina. I mean, it's clear that this is a terrible thing that has happened. It has traumatized numerous people. The sad thing is, Brad Pitt was the guy who said, I'm not going to get married until everyone's free to marry and all this kind of stuff. Now he's got married. You know, he's arguing for same-sex marriage. He's such, you know, he's the cool guy. He's Mr. Green and Mr. Environment. And he even was able to tell us all about Brexit, such as his deep and extensive knowledge of British politics. His marriage is split up. His wife says he's cruel and used prostitutes, whatever. I mean, the whole tragedy and so on. I don't even want to talk about that. It's just another broken marriage. But why is it so important in our culture?
Because one of the most prevalent sins that we have in this day and age is idolatry. Idolatry of celebrities, idolatry of self, idolatry of sex, idolatry of autonomy.
Yeah, it is. And it's interesting because there's a clip that is shown on the Have I Got News For You. It showed that news of Brangelina's split is truly devastating, say people of Aleppo. And, you know, that's what we should be caring about. What is happening in the world? I mean, Aleppo has just been bombed to nonsense.
The ceasefire didn't last at all.
Syrian soldiers are killed by American and British bombers. Mm. You could argue, is it the Russians retaliating, whatever? I mean, an aid convoy is attacked. But meanwhile, people are continuing to suffer. And there's a marvelous wee video that actually Obama shared. I thought it was wonderful, of a wee kid writing to him and saying about a six-year-old boy who's a refugee, we need to help him and so on. And that's the instinctive thing. You have Tim Farron, you know, losing his temper about refugees. But how we help refugees, what's important? I mean, it's just so complicated and so difficult. I mean, I'm proud that in my own city, there are refugees who've been taken in. There are people who are involved in that. I've got someone in my own congregation whose job is to work with refugees. And currently he's away from his home to work with refugees in Uganda for a couple of months. Last month, he was in Greece working with refugees. I think what's happening in the world, in Aleppo, in Syria, Afghanistan, and all these other areas, they are absolutely crucial. And Yemen. Do you know anything about Yemen?
Yemen is an oil-rich country. The government is pretty corrupt. It's majority Muslim. They've got a civil war going on, really, and a lot of it is by proxy because you've got Iran-backed rebels and you've got Saudi Arabia. So it's kind of there's kind of a war by proxy going on between Iran and Saudi.
And it's not even just that, because the Saudis are bombing civilians, and they're bombing civilians with weapons that we provide.
Yeah, but there's very little being said about in this country, really, about British relationships with the Saudis.
Also, incredibly important, and again, not major news, is there is a threat of a massive famine in northern Nigeria, where Boko Haram have been running riot. Mm-hmm. So, I'm sorry, but you put all these things into perspective, and our celebrity culture, to me, appears really sick that a divorce of a celebrity couple is deemed to be far more important than anything else, going just by the newspaper headlines over the past few days.
Yeah, out of the heart, the mouth speaks, though, doesn't it? Out of the subconscious of society, the newspapers reflect that, reflect where we are.
Well, they do, and I guess it's what they're able to sell as well.
Yeah. The newspapers shout, a new style is growing, but it don't know if it's coming or going. There is fashion, there is fact, some is good, some is bad, and the joke.
Now, speaking of obsessions and things that are trivial, I want to deal with a particular objection that constantly gets thrown against us. Because in a moment, I'm going to talk about transgender again, and people say, oh, for goodness sake, you guys are obsessed.
Why do you always have to keep bringing the topic back to that?
Well, the answer is this. What we do is we react to what's going on in the culture and what's going forward. Now, it's not us that's doing this, by the way. So what we're going to talk about just now is an astonishing program that the BBC produced. They have something called IPM.
This is Leo. He's 10 years old.
Yeah, I love Double Games. It is awesome.
He started back at school last week, like so many children and teenagers in England and Wales. It's been a busy time, but he's also contending with some other changes in his life. Last term, Leo attended school as a girl, but over the summer, he began to speak openly about his sense that that gender identity isn't quite right. With research help from his parents, he's decided he is non-binary. He feels both male and female. Though for the moment, he dresses as a boy, has taken a male name, and is called he.
I was just going to ignore this. I heard a clip on the PM programme, and I just thought, until I heard these words, and to me they were the most chilling words.
Recently, Leo's mum sent us a sentence of news.
Let me just remind you of the sentence that you sent in to us. So you said, "This week our 10-year-old daughter told us he's really our son, but this changes nothing, and we're fully supportive of his decision to come out as a transgender person. We love him, whoever he is."
Yay! So this is a child whose mother contacts the BBC like some kind of boast. And the BBC go and make a programme. And the programme itself is so chilling because this girl wanted to call herself Leo, but she decided she didn't really want to be a boy. So eventually, we hear this, his mother says,
"Leo is definitely not a girl. Leo is more boy than girl, but is..."
Which is why we're using male pronouns.
Yeah.
Which is why you're using male pronouns.
Yeah. "Some people in the transgender community are quite interested in getting away from this he-she dichotomy. So we had a look into how we felt as a family about gender-neutral pronouns, which I know a lot of non-binary people prefer. So we tried Z for a few days. That was horrible. We've tried they, but that's a plural, which is kind of complicated. So Leo then went to a sports camp in the identity of a boy with male pronouns. On day 4, Leo came home and said, "This doesn't feel right either." And we were feeling, oh, have we rushed him into something? Is this... So we then went online and looked at what potentially was going on. And it's very common for non-binary individuals or gender fluid or gender non-conforming. These are all jargony words that are out there. At this sort of age, to just rebel against the gender they've been assigned at birth and go all the way the other way and live in the opposite gender, when in fact they're not the opposite gender either. It's just they're more the opposite gender than the gender that they were assigned. So we're going with he, and Leo's chosen a male name, Leo, because he's definitely more boy than girl. But he's not, like a lot of transgender people, a male mind who happened to be born in a female body. He's a non-binary mind who happened to be born in a female body. That's where we are at the moment, but we're completely open to Leo deciding that that is not the case, in fact.
Leo is definitely not a girl. Leo is more boy than girl, but he's not, like a lot of transgender, a male mind who happened to be born in a female body. He's a non-binary mind who happened to be born in a female body. This is where I'm going to be really strong. This was, first of all, an example of child abuse.
Yeah.
First of all. I mean, this kind of middle class, oh, isn't it wonderful to be transgender and look at our child. But these parents using their child for propaganda is absolutely horrendous. And the BBC buying into that is absolutely horrendous. Absolutely horrendous. Yeah. I mean, you listen to it and you're absolutely horrified at what's going.
Mum was completely on board first thing. Totally, like, interested. She's like, "Well, what would be your name if you were a boy? And you've always been more attracted to boys. Would you be a gay man or a straight man?" Or just, that was so great. Dad took a little more time to actually call me Leo and use male pronouns.
Well, it's quite a big thing, isn't it, to get your head around?
Yeah, so that was totally fine. And I just think it's so great that I have these two wonderful parents and an excellent brother. If I hadn't told people, I would have just gotten more and more unhappy.
The questions that your mum was asking you, did you know how to answer them?
I didn't know what name I would have, and mum suggested some stuff there. But with, like, would you be a gay man or a straight man? I do like boys, and so, yeah.
I think it is about allowing ideology to so predominate that you're prepared to allow. I mean, maybe she means really, really well, but I'm sorry. Phoning the BBC, getting them to come, whatever it is, it results in some kind of abuse. Because the fact is that up to 98%, at least 75%, but some people reckon up to 98% of people who might identify as you know, another gender.
As a young child.
As a young child.
Grow out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so when you've got a mother saying, we're thinking about hormone blockers and stuff, you're thinking, this is abuse.
Yeah, that is abuse.
Although we all know that puberty is knocking. We've talked about periods. We've talked about how he's going to feel about that. He's just not distressed, but he's also would rather not, I think, at this stage. I am interested in finding more out about hormone blockers.
Now, there's a quote from an article by Ken McIntosh, which I thought was really good. It says, in unquestionably placing both this child and his mother on a pedestal, the BBC are complicit in a reckless process that moves a young person that much closer to potentially harmful treatments. And I think that's true. So here's why we speak about it. Because we think it is child abuse, because we think it is doing a great deal of harm in our culture, and because the BBC and the Scottish government and the British government and numerous other organisations are using this issue, are propagandising this issue without knowing enough about it. I feel really sorry for people who are genuinely transgender and who are struggling with all that that involves. And gender dysphoria is something that does exist and does need help with. Superb article from UCCF that we put on the Solas Facebook page.
Uh-huh.
But I'm sorry, we're not going to keep quiet about this state propaganda being used, especially when it results in child abuse.
Liberal Democrats have come up with a new way of raising funds for the government. A new tax that they're discussing at the moment, they're thinking about this, and it would raise how much for the Treasury coffers?
£1 billion if they decriminalise prostitution and tax it.
I was with you up until you said decriminalise prostitution.
Yeah, £1 billion. Oh, that could be used for the health service. I mean, you can justify it.
So the government would be pimps and they'll take 20% off the top.
The story here is that there's a Lib Dem councillor who says that schools could suggest prostitution as a career course for pupils.
So your PE classes become pole dancing classes.
You could have it, you know, careers fairs and so on. They had a special session at the Brighton Lib Dem conference on what they call sex work, what everyone else calls prostitution. I mean, this gentleman called Dennis Parsons of the Cheltenham Lib Dems, and he says this, the fact that we are asking, should we seek to prevent people entering sex work, is part of the problem. You wouldn't ask the question, should we prevent people becoming accountants? You'd just take it for granted.
Just think of the morality that's involved behind the thinking there.
Where you even begin to go with that is just breathtaking. And I think most listeners to this will recognize what's wrong with it. But there is another problem. And the problem is that the leader of the Liberal Democrats is a Christian, an evangelical Christian, Tim Farron. What do you think he has said about this?
Righteousness exalts a nation and sin is a reproach.
To any people?
No.
Okay. He said he disagrees with it. Good. So far, so good.
But is that just his personal opinion and he won't use it to stop anybody else?
What he actually says, his quote to the Press Association is, it's a wonderful thing that we're in a party where those sorts of views can be expressed and you can have that sort of exchange. They're certainly not my views. Drawing the equivalence between sex work and accountancy is not one that I share. I think we're in a position where we are a liberal party and it's not for me to go telling anyone they can't have views and share them. That's how you get to the bottom of these things. Now, here's the problem with that. But what was Tim Farron in trouble for?
For holding views that were Christian.
Yes, for daring to abstain on
against
a vote on same-sex
marriage.
Which, of course, he's had to repent of and everything else. In his party, I suspect you could not hold Christian views on homosexuality, on transgender. You know, you wouldn't be allowed to. On the other hand, this liberal party, which he celebrates, will allow someone to suggest that children in school should be taught that prostitution is
a
suitable
valid
career
choice. Yeah. Religion in America is worth more than Google and Apple. combined to the US economy.
$1.2 trillion. Yeah. It's the 15th largest economy in the world, and that's a conservative estimate. There are 344,000 congregations in the US, employing hundreds of thousands of staff and buying billions of dollars worth of goods and services. More than 150 million Americans are members of faith congregations. I mean, it's big business.
Define what you mean by American faith. I mean, it's a massive gamut of different beliefs.
Yes, but we're talking about religion being worth all of that. I think that that's true, actually. And I think there are positives and negatives in that. One of the negatives is, if you want to make money, be religious.
God TV.
Well, especially in the US as well, yeah, with the tax-free and everything else. And I think the church has to be really, really wary of all of that. As soon as religion becomes a way to make money, you're going to get hucksters and everyone else come on board. And I think the church is full of that. Sorry, well, I do.
The Eddie Longs, the Kenneth Copelands, dare I say Joyce Meyer?
No, don't say Joyce Meyer. Yes, you dare say Joyce Meyer, because I think they run like a business. So we can say that. The positive side of it, though, is that there are people who are prepared to put money into all of these things. And in fact, with austerity and with a decline in government in this country, it is going to be churches and others who are going to have to provide.
They pick up the pieces for, in terms of social care, the government is no longer doing. I mean, there's news in Scotland today about how the budget for social care is something like 700 million short, if they want to maintain the same standard of service that we have now with an increasing aging population.
I'm neutral about the religion being worth so much, because religion can be harmful. In fact, religion often is harmful. But real Christianity, and in that sense, I'm really encouraged.
It's beneficial to a society,
Every night.
There's a new course from Christianity Explored Ministries called Life Explored. It's a 7-week course that's very evangelistic. David, you're using this already in your church. What do you make of it?
I love it. I mean, we're using it in a slightly different way because we've had so many new people coming to church. Uh-huh. I mean, many of them are Christians, but a lot of them are not. So what we're doing is we're combining it almost like a members class. Uh-huh. So we have a welcome group and the people come, and we've been just using the video and asking some of the main questions, doing the wee Bible study with it. And I think it's fabulous. And I much prefer the term life explored. Mm-hmm. I think what stands out in this, though, is the quality of the video production is superb.
Absolutely.
I think it's really, really well done. And I think the questions, I think how it's run,
the way they've structured their course, they've got these very interesting, sort of very short opening videos that initially Christians, when they see them for the first time, you think, well, how on earth can these be evangelistic? How can you get to the gospel from here? But then when you tie them in with the second video that you would show in an evening, the two work incredibly well together. The first video kind of draws you in and you begin to see your own sin, your own idolatry, you recognize elements of yourself in the first video. And then the second video comes along with a rock solid gospel proclamation that really turns the tables on you. It's incredibly well done. The videos are beautiful, and it's something we recommend that you check out for your church.
I think actually any church, what you could do is use Life Explored, then Christianity Explored, then Discipleship Explored.
Use the two together. Yeah.
The three. Then Discipleship Explored, because then you kind of cover the whole year. Basically, we're saying highly recommended, just as we would recommend the Solas magazine. So we'd recommend these videos. And really, that's what it is. People should be looking and asking, what's life about?
Now, I was fortunate enough to get along to the launch event of Life Explored last week in Edinburgh and managed to grab an interview with Nate Morgan Locke, who is one of the writers and presenters of Life Explored. And we've made that recording available as an episode of Quantum Extra. So if you go to the Solas website at solas-cpc.org and look on the blog, you can hear the whole interview there.
Now what's the meaning of the line? Tell me. Well, it's like dreaming of your goals, ambitions. I'm feeling free. I'm on this mission to achieve. What's in your mind's eye? This is what you believe you should gain. Uh-huh.
satisfaction become a shining example and test as a sample of a new race that has ample supply of positivity.
You mean flow?
Well, like electricity.
So
you see a clear way with no ambiguity, don't you know?
Tim Keller's new book, which I will write a review of because I'll finish it today, Making Sense of God. Wow. Just wow for me, because it's for skeptics, it's for people that we deal with a lot, and for me, it's almost perfection. It's just wonderful.
Well, there was an interesting review that came out. I think it was the Good Book Company that sent out saying, oh, here's this book that we're selling. We really like it. We wish there was more gospel in it and the gospel was sooner. But apart from that, we think it's worthwhile reading. That's a very interesting way to promote a book.
I disagree with them, by the way. I think gospel is shot through. But I think you're dealing with people, you're dealing with people's worldview and you're pointing them towards Christ. I mean, for example, the section on hope. That's as gospel as you can get. I mean, it just, so yeah, I read that review. I thought it was interesting too, but I mean, it's good that we can disagree sometimes about these things, but I love that book. I mean, some of Keller's books, he's never written a bad book in my view. They're all good, but some are great. So his book on prayer is great. It's outstanding. His book on the reason for God, the prodigal God, to me, these are all outstanding. But I think for me, this is about as good as it gets. Now, that is for people like me who are interested in this sort of stuff. It's for people who are skeptics. I've never read anything like it. Mm. If I can put it this way, his book on prayer is great because it's an amalgamation of all the great books on prayer. His book on skepticism, if you like, or introducing Christ to non-believers is great because to some extent it's an amalgamation of some of the best things. Some of them he's written himself, of course, on that subject. So go get it. Read it along with your Solas magazine as you're listening to the Tolle Leggy.
Take up and read.
Yeah, as you're listening to this podcast, have a good week and we shall see you next week.
Yo. We're part of a culture that really loves to hate us. Every chance they attempt to isolate and debate us. It's not that they don't like us, it's just they don't like God in us. It's common knowledge and oddly enough, but makes a lot of sense to a lot of us. We completely understand because we used to occupy the same space and lived in a similar type state until we tasted of God's grace. So we continue loving this world that so easily rejects us and passionately press past the lack of their cultural acceptance. And as if there weren't enough problems for us gaining influence, we keep fighting over the issue of what's too worldly of a Christian to make a difference. So no matter how you paint it or politically campaign it, whether you water it down and drain it, it's really all the same, ain't it? It's the same frustration, same constant segregation. Christians living like aliens trying to relate with citizens of a different nation. What always makes for a better presentation than bark and bite is a proper understanding of living life filled with salt and light. So we walk this fine line of walking in light of God's kindness and live with a sense of worldliness without the fear of compromising. Loving God and neighbor until Christ comes to split the sky or die in this society, hailing Jesus as Messiah. Yep.